Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, April 20th. If you watch much cable TV on Saturday or Sunday, or even listen to more sober outlets, you probably saw a lot of attention paid to President Trump supporting protesters in various states who are congregating, sometimes less than 6 feet apart, to protest stay-at-home orders and demand a partial reopening now. On Friday, the president tweeted, "Liberate Minnesota, liberate Michigan, liberate Virginia." Now, those are all swing states for November, of course, and they all have Democratic governors to make villains out of. At his Friday briefing, the president referred to social distancing not as a medical necessity, but as something to be politically mocked.
It's Mike Pence, who's a phenomenal guy. He's making the commencement address right now at the Air Force Academy, where they're being very politically correct. Everyone's standing not 6 feet, but 10 feet apart. Okay.
Called it very politically correct. That was Friday's briefing. Last night, he was praising social distancing, so he's giving mixed messages. To what political end, I'm not exactly sure. And by reading too much about this during what used to be called my weekend, I came upon evidence that these protests are not as straightforward as a grassroots movement springing up among people who have lost their jobs and want to avoid poverty. For example, do you know who Stephen Moore is? He's a longtime conservative media commentator on economics. He's been a guest on this show multiple times to argue conservative economic positions. He makes his case, and he's been many other places. He's a favorite of low-tax corporate lobbyists, among others. President Trump tried to appoint him to the Federal Reserve Board last year. You remember that? But that fell apart because of many things Moore had said over the years about race and gender. One of them, according to The Atlantic, was that after Trump's victory in November 2016, Moore joked, referring to Barack and Michelle Obama and their kids, that Trump's first act would be to kick a black family out of public housing. Hilarious, right? Well, Stephen Moore is still working that muscle. Last week, Trump appointed Moore to the president's task force on how to reopen the economy, and Moore instantly started doing what? Helping to organize these protests in conjunction with at least one wealthy donor. Here he is just saying that right out loud on a libertarian YouTube show called Freedom on Tap, and you won't want to miss the racial reference in this.
In Ohio, we saw protests today. I'm working with a group in Wisconsin that wants to do a drive-in. So, you know, you remember the old sit-ins, but this is going to be a drive-in. They're going to shut down the Capitol. Shh, don't tell anybody. But they think they can get 1,500 people to come in. And this is great. You guys will. So we have one big donor in Wisconsin. I'm not going to mention his name. And I told him about this. He said, "Steve, I promise I will pay the bail and legal fees for anyone who gets arrested." So this is a great time, gentlemen and ladies, for civil disobedience. We need to be the Rosa Parks here and protest against these government injustices.
So at least the drive-in would be socially distanced, but social distancing policies during the pandemic are the moral equivalent of Jim Crow. A wealthy donor who we won't name is fanning the flames, and Stephen Moore, while calling not just for protests but for civil disobedience, which would make police officers risk close contact to arrest people, presumably. And Moore is an actual member in good standing of the president's reopening task force, now organizing protests against social distancing and claiming that he and his friends are the new Rosa Parks. We'll get reaction to this now and at least two other developments. Congress might be about to reach agreement on the next Paycheck Protection Funding Bill, yay, to allow more small businesses not to lay off employees. And Governor Andrew Cuomo has announced one tiny easing of the stay-at-home order in New York. People can now go out on the water again from boatyards and marinas as long as they observe social distancing rules. The boatyards and marinas had been closed. With me now is a member of the New York congressional delegation for whom that would be of particular interest, Democratic Congressman Tom Suozzi, whose district runs along the Long Island Sound from near the Whitestone Bridge in Queens, out past Huntington and Northport in Suffolk County. His website calls the Long Island Sound our national park. So we'll talk about all these developments and more. Hi, Congressman Swazi. Thanks very much for coming back on with us.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me on. And let me just first say, you know, when you hear those things bunched together in your opening, it's just wildly unbelievable that the president can be so irresponsible when it comes to this idea of trying to incite people to protest like this. It, you know, this is not politics. This is not populism. This is science and public health. And the idea of getting people out to protest, the idea of revolting against social distancing at this stage of the game is just so irresponsible and so upsetting. And I appreciate you putting all those pieces together in the beginning of the show.
Thank you. And to take their arguments at face value, the civil liberties arguments for these mostly Midwest protesters are that the Constitution guarantees a right to assembly, so I guess they don't like social distancing laws on those grounds. Also, on Second Amendment grounds, the closing of gun shops as non-essential, while other things like liquor stores and marinas can stay open. And they object specifically to banning religious services because of freedom of religion in the First Amendment, despite the risks of congregating. So do you agree with any of those constitutional arguments?
No, that's a bastardization of the Constitution. The reality is we all know the First Amendment argument. You know, you have the right to say what you want, but you can't yell fire in a theater, and which would cause panic. That would be completely irresponsible. You don't have a free speech to panic everyone. And you have these rights. There's no question you have a right to assemble. You have a right to bear arms. You have a right for all these different things. But that doesn't outweigh the right for everybody else to be alive and to be safe and their public health. So the government has a role to protect public health, and we need to make sure that during these perilous times that people are safe. Now, listen, are places different in different places in the country? There's no question about it. New York City is very different than North Dakota, but there needs to be different ways of reopening the economy in these different places. But at the same time, we can't be creating this idea of a public frenzy and ask for the you know, public protest on public health issues. This is the job where the president's got to work with the governors, has to work with the Democrats and the Republicans. We all need to work together. And getting back to how different it is from place to place, we here in New York need to fight for New York. New York has over 30% of the infections. We have almost 40% of the deaths. We are unique. We are the epicenter. And when there's money being distributed based upon money for hospitals or money being distributed for state governments or money even being given out in the PPP program, the payroll protection program, which is for small businesses, which we hope to refund this week and put more money into it, we need to be recognizing that New York and New Jersey and some other places in the country are much more desperate circumstances.
And hold that thought for a minute, because we'll get into that in more detail. We'll talk about the bills working their way through Congress and how the bills that already passed have been applied inequitably in the way that you say. But just to finish the thought on the people who aren't social distancing, you would think it's only going on in more sparsely populated states. But I read about something that happened this weekend in Brooklyn, a so-called anti-lockdown party that the NYPD issued 60 summonses at on Saturday. As reported on Gothamist, people busted up a party of dozens of people at a Canarsie barbershop Saturday night, issuing those 60 summonses and arresting two people on gun possession charges. One alleged partygoer told the New York Post, "We're pioneering the anti-lockdown." So I guess my last question on this would be, do you know of any such so-called pioneers, or for that matter, big Republican donors funding pioneers like Stephen Moore was referring to in your district?
I don't know of anything like that. I haven't seen any evidence of that. Early on in the social distancing era, when this first started, soon after I was on your show the first time, I did hear about people trying to hold weddings, and the police went in to break them up. But I haven't seen any of this effort of, you know, upstate, there are literally upstate New York, there are militias. And in certain places in the state and in the country, there are people that are armed and that are part of this type of movement. And it's really misdirected. And we need the president, who has influence with a lot of these folks and with many people, to be responsible here and to look out for our public health.
Maybe the state should test all those 60 anti-lockdown partiers in 2 weeks, plus everyone they came in contact with, and maybe a couple of more degrees of separation, and see what the damage is. All right, the Paycheck Protection Program, the small business grants and loans intended to allow fewer layoffs. They ran out of the first $350 billion quickly. There was so much demand. So many of our listeners, Congressman, are waiting for more of that funding, and they've been calling in, whether they're employers or employees. But Congress has been stuck with Democrats and Republicans wanting different things in or out of the bill. Now we hear a deal could come today. What can you report?
I spoke with Senator Schumer's office this morning. You know, he's working so hard on this and doing a great job for us. I've spoken with some of Nancy Pelosi's staff, and we're hoping we can get a deal. We're not getting everything we want. We want to see money for our state and local governments. That's not going to be part of this package, it looks like. But there will be more money for the PPP program, the Payroll Protection Program, and there will be some more money for hospitals, which is so important. But I'm very concerned about and I expressed this morning, you know, the Payroll Protection Program, which is a great idea, what we've seen in practice is that a lot of the bigger small businesses defined for this program as 500 employees or less, but a lot of the bigger small employees are getting these loans, and a lot of the smaller small businesses, you know, the doctor's office, the dentist office, the hardware store, the plumber, the person trying to get $50,000 or $100,000 has been shut out in the New York area, whereas some of the bigger players are getting these funds. And again, this is New York. You know, every business in New York is being affected in gargantuan ways here. And we're getting the same type of attention as they are in, you know, Kansas or Texas or North Dakota, where they don't have as big a problem as we do. And as a result, they can distribute the money more evenly amongst people, whereas everybody's rushing at once in New York to try and get this help. And a lot of smaller, less sophisticated players are getting left behind.
Yeah, let me put some stats on that that I looked up this weekend, because it is outrageous. These are CBS News stats. Businesses in Texas got more PPP loans than any other state, although Texas has only the 10th biggest coronavirus disease caseload. New York, with by far the most of any state, ranked only 4th in the number of PPP loans. So there's that. And on the big businesses, it says the owner of the Ruth's Chris Steakhouse chain got $20 million from the Small Business Loan Program, despite having more than 5,000 employees and $468 million in revenue last year. And I just saw an item come across a little while ago that said Shake Shack is now going to give back the PPP money that it got. I don't know if Shake Shack got got rescinded from them because they were too big, or if they were shamed into it so they wouldn't lose future customers.
But they were being nice, or they were doing the right thing.
Yeah, it could be even actually being nice to be nice. I guess we shouldn't be so cynical as to rule out that possibility. But the new bill that you're working on for several hundred billion dollars more funding for this, are there provisions in the bill that will prevent those kinds of abuses?
Well, one of the things the Democrats are fighting for is to make sure that smaller banks, minority-owned banks, credit unions, community banks are guaranteed a certain amount of this funding. We've been pushing for $60 billion or $100 billion, and I don't know whether the final number is going to come down. I'm advocating today to find out if there's any kind of language we can put in to make sure that the banks themselves, you know, there's a lot of small businesses, you know, 1, 2, 5, 10 employees that bank with the big banks. They bank with Bank of America. They bank with TD Bank. They bank with Wells Fargo. They bank with the big banks, you know, Chase and Capital One and all, and they're getting left behind. So we have to bring attention to the banks and say, listen, you have got to, number one, pay attention to your smaller customers. And two, we need to figure out whether there's something we can do legislatively to require them to pay attention to their smaller customers. I don't know what the proper language would be for that, but I'm talking about that this morning with a couple of folks on the legislative side to see if they can figure that out.
Let's take a phone call. John in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with Congressman Tom Suozzi. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Tom. My wife owns a small business. 5 employees. The problem with her is she doesn't want to get a loan. You could introduce all these good deals and everything. The loan is you have to pay back. You know, you should be giving grants, encouraging people to get back to a business. We're giving out grants to other nations in the world. So, I mean,
John,
the small business.
The payroll protection program is set up that if you bring your employees back, the loan is forgivable. So it's designed to we want you to bring back your employees. If you bring back your employees, you use this money to pay them, it'll be forgivable. So you and your wife should talk to the SBA, the Small Business Administration, and to your bank about the possibility of you doing this program, and it will be, in effect, a grant. It'll be a forgivable loan.
John, I hope that's helpful and solves the problem. But it's confusing, Congressman, because it's called all over the media a small business loan program. And so then you have people like John's wife, who owns a small business, who think they're going to have to pay it back, when really maybe if they keep the employees on the payroll, they won't have to pay it back. That's confusing. Why don't they just call it a grant program?
Because the purpose of the program is a payroll protection program. So we need the borrowers to actually comply with that part of the provision, which is to actually hire their people back. Now, there's a question for restaurants, especially, you know, and catering halls. Catering halls are a big business on Long Island and New York generally compared to the rest of the country. You know, if they bring back their employees, then this program is only for two months of salary. Well, what happens after that? Their businesses are not going to be back up and running full-fledged within the 2 months of March and April, and, you know, starting in May or June, people will not be up and running full-fledged again that quickly. So, you know, and in some places in the country, they may be up and running quickly, but not in New York. And so we're going to be coming back, you know, relatively slowly compared to some other places in the country, and we can't be penalized for that. So I'm working on trying to set up some special provisions in the payroll protection program to look out for these businesses that will not be up and running quickly, especially restaurants and catering halls.
Juan in Union, New Jersey. You're on WNYC with Congressman Tom Suozzi. Hi, Juan.
Hello. I'm going to try my best with my English, but this is my common question. I know there is a lot of people in my community, friends of mine. You know, there is a different layers of immigration status in this country. So I was telling the screener that, for example, one of the situations that my friends and I have is that when you're going to try to apply for this program, one of the things that is required is that you need to be a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident. But when you're just applying for something in different levels, what you have is only a social security number and a work permit. And with that, you're able to open your business. That's one thing. And the other one is, we just invest like $120,000 in a small restaurant that we opened January 6th. When we went to try to apply for some of these programs, the application won't let you go farther into without you providing records of last year's tax, unemployment payments, and all of that. So I've been talking to my the government people from my town, and really no help. I don't know. So
do you have those records for your restaurant for last year, or if not, why not?
Because we just opened January 6th.
Because you just opened. January 6th. All right. He's got two great questions there, Congressman. One is, I mean, this is a business owner, and he's got an immigration status problem, it sounds like. Not even necessarily undocumented, but maybe not far along on the path toward citizenship. To qualify for the PPP, he's afraid. And the other is, it's requiring records from last year when he just opened his business this year, but he would still like to be able to get the loan to preserve his employees. Can you help him on either of those things?
So now, Juan, is the bank saying that you're not eligible because of your immigration status, or are you just worried about checking?
When I go, because I've been in contact with Wells Fargo, because that's where we have our business account and everything,
Wells Fargo?
Wells Fargo and the first thing that that you see is say that one of the requirements that you need to be a citizen or a permanent resident. You know, and as I say, there are different layers of immigration. You may be just waiting for asylum or petition for something, and you're in the limbo, but you can still, for example, I own a landscaping business too. I was able to open that, pay my taxes for the past 5 years without being, you know, a U.S. citizen. I just have a work permit and a social security number.
Right. That's so interesting, and I'm sure there are other people like that. So if you got that, Congressman, he's not a permanent resident yet, but he has had a legal business, a landscaping company, and now he's got this restaurant too that he's been paying taxes on, but he says he doesn't qualify for the loan because of his immigration status.
Well, let me just say a couple things. Number one is that I will look further into whether or not we can be helpful with that. And if you can give your name and number to Brian's team, I'll find out who your member of Congress is to help you in your district. Number two is, you know, a lot of people are realizing that a lot of immigrants that we have in the country right now are the folks that are doing the essential jobs right now, that are out there every single day, that are working in supermarkets, that are working cleaning in hospitals, that are doing deliveries. A lot of the essential work, quote unquote, essential work that's happening right now is being done by immigrants, and there needs to be an appreciation for human beings that are just trying to make a living here in the country and to treat people with respect and with dignity. All men and women are created equal. It's not that all men and women with a green card are created equal. It's that all men and women should be treated with human respect and dignity. But let me just say that Wells Fargo, you know, there's been a lot of stories about Wells Fargo about, you know, paying attention to just their big customers and not to their little customers. And again, it's the big small businesses, not the small businesses. And this is a problem not just with, I'm not just picking on Wells Fargo alone, there's just been some stories written about them. But this is a problem that we need to address of smaller businesses getting attention through the PPP program. As far as being a brand new business that didn't operate last year and as a result doesn't have the records, I don't know what the answer to that question is. I don't know how we would overcome that from a technical point of view. Because you're a brand new business.
If I can get personal for a minute before you go, I read that your father-in-law died last week after becoming infected with the virus. Please accept my very sincere condolences, Congressman. You and I have been talking for years, and I'm so sorry for your loss. May I ask, did he die in a hospital?
Yes, he did. He was diagnosed, put in the hospital on a Saturday, and died on the day after Easter on Monday morning at 1 o'clock in the morning. And this is personal for my family and for everyone's family. And everyone knows someone who's died, people that are sick. There's a lot of anxiety related to the sickness, certainly a lot of sadness related to people dying, a lot of anxiety related to people's financial issues, as we heard about here today. And, you know, we need to recognize that as much as everybody in the country and the world is going through this right now, New York is really a hot spot, the hottest of hot spots. And we need some special attention from our friends and neighbors throughout the country. You know, we've been through tough things before, whether it was 9/11 or even the financial crisis in 2008. We were at epicenter, Hurricane Sandy. Now we're right on top again of this human tragedy, and we really need the government at the federal level all over the country to recognize that we want to help everybody, but New York is a special case that needs special help for our hospitals, for our state government, for our local governments, in the PPP program with our businesses. We need some special help. We've got over 30% of the cases, almost 40% of the deaths. It's affecting all of us, and we're going to need our fellow American citizens' help during this tough time.
Congressman Tom Suozzi, thank you so much. Stay safe.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast. Under the circumstances in our country right now, we'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.